In the wake of the midterm election, Democrats are now looking ahead to 2019, when they will officially regain control of the U.S. House of Representatives. In Pennsylvania, Democrats will send 9 representatives to Congress, up from 5 current lawmakers. 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins sat down with Democratic Congressman Mike Doyle to talk about his legislative goals and what he thought about the election results.
It's funny how the same issue that probably unseated 61 of us back in 2010 was the same issue that we basically won this election by, because people finally now understand what it means to go back to a system where insurance companies can discriminate against you because you're sick. And every Republican had become an instant convert to pre-existing conditions. It was remarkable to see the epiphany that occurred within that party once they realized the public got this. And I think we want this period of new Democratic leadership in the House to be one initially where we really start an education campaign to start to get public buy-in and understanding and acceptance of things like a climate change plan. These are issues that, you know, we just aren't going to pass right away because of the makeup of the Senate and the presidency, but it gives us a forum to have a voice and have an agenda that we can put forward to the public and make that, you know, the battleground for the 2020 election too.
How useful is it to have that kind of ambitious progressive agenda when Republicans do control the Senate and President Trump has another 2 years in the White House?
Well, I think that we have to be realistic about what's in front of us. This is a tremendous opportunity for us to garner public buy-in and acceptance. Pre-existing conditions, I go back to health care. Whether you're a Republican, an independent, or a Democrat, and you look at polling on that, people are for that, right? Because they finally understand what it means. It's the same with climate change. We have to break this down into segments where people start to understand why it's important to make these kinds of changes and investments. Now, this isn't going to happen just because Democrats took over the House of Representatives, and it's not going to happen next month. So I think for a lot of us, we're begging for the time to set the stage for us to be able to eventually pass legislation like this and hopefully get a president that will sign it.
What areas do you feel need more oversight? Do you sense that there are common goals within the Democratic Party and in the House as far as pursuing specific investigations?
I think we want to have a sense that nobody has undue influence over our president. He has been reluctant to reveal his tax returns, as every other president has done. This leads to suspicion. Not so much, does he have investments in other countries, but do other countries have investments in him? I think people have a right to know that. Now, the House Ways and Means Committee has subpoena power to look at the president's tax returns to see whether or not there's any potential conflicts that do exist that could impact our national security. You know, when the president is strangely silent with the Saudis under the recent execution of a journalist in Turkey, when the president seems unwilling or unable to have anything critical to say about Putin and Russia, it raises a certain amount of questions as to why that is. When the rest of his party, by the way, has been quite vocal, not all of them, but many of them in the party, about what's going on in Saudi Arabia right now and what's been going on with regards to Russia and how they're trying to influence elections, not only in our country, but all across the world. And Republicans, quite frankly, have been unwilling to exercise their oversight responsibilities on this president.
Do you see areas for Democrats and Republicans in Congress to compromise on? That's something that we heard a lot after the election from both sides in this extremely divided era of politics that we're in, that Democrats and Republicans need to come together. What issues do you see that you could compromise with a conservative member of Congress on, and if you have any specific legislation?
Yeah, sure. Infrastructure is always brought up as an area for compromise. You know, roads and bridges and the electric grid and broadband deployment aren't Democratic or Republican issues. They're issues we all care about. When we talk about infrastructure, we're talking about a comprehensive piece of infrastructure that would not just be roads and bridges, but would be our water and sewer systems, would be the electric grid, would be broadband deployment in unserved and underserved areas of the country. This takes revenue. And I think that's where the fights come in, right? How do you pay for these things? Mm-hmm. But I think there's a real will in the Congress to do it. Immigration. The Senate passed a comprehensive immigration bill with 68 votes that continues to sit over in the House of Representatives. I believe that if that bill were on the floor today, it would not only get most every Democratic vote, but it would get 60 or 70 or 80 Republican votes if it were put on the floor for a vote. Paul Ryan wouldn't let the bill come to the floor. Gun legislation. I mean, how many tragedies have to happen, now one in our own city, before we can sit down as a country and say, aren't there some things we can agree upon? I mean, I would go a lot further than a lot of members would. I see no civilian purpose for weapons that are military-style weapons.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you about. I saw you at the press conference after the Tree of Life shooting, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about gun control legislation.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. This happens over and over, and I guess I'm just wondering how realistic you actually think legislation surrounding this is. I mean, you know, after Parkland, President Trump invited survivors of gun violence to come and talk about reform, and some people were hopeful then, and some people said, you know, nothing's going to happen this time either. So, yeah.
It's really hard to be optimistic about it because we've been disappointed so many times. When those young children were slaughtered in Connecticut, I thought this is it. This is so horrific, so unthinkable that, you know, we're going to get something done. My own city, the most horrific slaughter of Jews in the history of our country. I mean, good Lord, what more has to happen before we can talk? I mean, we don't even get a chance to vote on the bills. And I would hope, as the Democrats now control the House, that we at least put members on record. Okay, so it's never going to pass the Senate, or the president won't sign it. Who knows, after all these tragedies? But I don't think it's unfair to say to members of Congress, where do you stand on registration, on closing these loopholes? Where do you stand on semi-automatic weapons and clips? Is it a magic bullet? It's not. But my frustration is we don't talk about them. We just have moments of silence, and then we do nothing. And that's what makes me crazy. That's why every time when the speaker said, you know, please stand for a moment of silence, that I want to walk out of the chamber because I know what's going to happen after the moment's over. So I hope that changes in the House. We'll see. I'm pushing my party in that direction.
Speaking of voting and your party and pushing that forward, I'm curious, how do you see candidates like Connor Lamb elected in these moderate suburbs versus another young Democrat like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Is the Democratic Party a party where both of those types of candidates can coexist and push forward legislation they're both interested in?
Well, let me say, if it isn't, we'll never govern. This country has 435 congressional districts. Connor Lamb probably could not win a district in Queens, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez could never win Connor Lamb's district. Yet we share a lot of basic values together. When you look at the core values of Democrats, standing up for the poor, for the working class, for the middle class in the country, we might have different ideas on the best way to do that. But these are the things that bind us as a party. Yeah, we're a party that's very diverse, from the very far left over to our blue dogs and everything in between. But we have some common things that bind us, and I think it's around economic issues that Democrats, you know, that's our core message. And I want to see us govern because I think the majority of Americans are going to do better when we govern than when they govern. And if we're going to be able to govern, then yeah, we need Connor Lamb. These are the seats that we used to have. We're not going to get them back with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We're going to get them back with Connor Lamb's. So, you know, we talk about a national message. That national message, I think, should always be around pocketbook issues. Then in each congressional district, you tailor that message, or you add to that message with those issues that are really germane in your district. Hmm. And that varies from congressional district to congressional district.
Do you support Nancy Pelosi for speaker?
I wish we had choices, but you can't beat someone with no one. So yes, I do. I think at this time, we need some stability in the party too. My question is, if not Nancy, who? And the problem is there's no who. When I got elected, the Democrats had lost control of the Congress for the first time in 40 years. we had a complete slate of candidates to run against the incumbent slate of candidates. Every position, from the speaker all the way down to the last position. We had a choice to say, okay, who are we going to vote for? I voted for every one of the new people when I got there. I thought, hey, you just lost the Congress for the first time in 40 years. Why would I put you back in charge of my party? And I voted, and it was a secret ballot election, and probably good for me because every one of the guys I voted for lost, and the incumbents were all reelected. Here we have a situation when people say to me, you're going to vote for Nancy Pelosi. I always say, well, who's running against Nancy Pelosi? She's unopposed. Nobody's worked harder than Nancy Pelosi for the party. Nobody's raised more money. Nobody's spent their whole life, in members' congressional districts campaigning. For me, it's a generational thing. There's a new generation of Democrats that are ready to, assume the mantle, and they've been blocked from doing that, because they haven't had an opportunity to do that. My question is, why don't we have a slate? Why haven't these next generation of Democrats that want to lead show some leadership and put themselves out there? But the fact of the matter is, no one has put themselves out there. Let me tell you something. It's a tough, thankless job, number one, yeah. In case people don't realize it. You give up whatever semblance of a family life you have to do this, because when you're not in session, your life is somebody else's. You're out in one of those congressional districts, or you're out raising money, or you're on the speaking circuit with the national news media. That's what these jobs entail. And you don't get a penny more to do it, and you get a whole bunch of grief because you've got, your members of your party, all of them expect that, you live to serve them. This isn't a job for a rookie. We need somebody that has the respect of the caucus and the gravitas to be in this type of position. Now, is Nancy going to be there forever? No, I really believe this would be her final term as the speaker. So I see this really as a transition year. And if nobody steps forward to run against them, my hope would be that we not have some silly exercise where we just burn the place down and have no backup plan.
Congressman Doyle, thank you so much for chatting with me.
My pleasure.
That was WESA's Lucy Perkins talking with Congressman Mike Doyle. House Democrats are expected to begin the first round of voting on leadership next week.